You know, Shana, it's been a little while since we've done a show together. It's great to see you.
Good to see you, Chris. I know we've been in webinar land for a bit, and I was off for a couple of weeks at my sister's house. So, yes, it's good to be back. Welcome to What in God's Name. He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shana Appel. We are doing current events and culture from a philosophical and theological point of view. And Shana, I thought of a new tagline. We have new taglines every now and then. We're not a podcast.
No.
We're an idea that has a podcast.
We're an idea. Beautiful. We're an idea that has a podcast. I like that.
People find our show at different times, and so if you are a new listener, if this is the first episode you have chosen,
welcome.
Welcome to you if you're finding our show today. As Shana mentioned, thanks to all who joined our webinar last Wednesday evening. Our seminar, our webinar was Worth Our Salt, the Distinctive Flavor of Christian Witness in this election season, and it had a distinctively Christian bent to it, but we welcome all to our show, all who want to think philosophically and or theologically and or, I'm also going to add psychologically. I feel like the psychological state of our country is worthy of our analysis and does take us deeper. And I link psychology and spirituality. That's just how I see the world. So I add psychology to our little...
Hey, well, that's great. Gets us right past the binary of theology and philosophy, doesn't it?
We're not going to spin our spinny wheel today. We've got a full agenda. But for those of you who are regular listeners, we have a lovely little spinny wheel that we play with and just have a little bit of playfulness with and creativity with it. We'll play.
Gives us a context for the show some days, but we're going to skip it today.
That's right. So let's see.
We are recording this idea with a podcast on the day after the election. You all will hear it 2 days after the election. Which in and of itself is going to be interesting because we don't know what in God's name is going to change between today and the time when this podcast actually airs.
Yeah, so at this point, we don't know who has won the presidency. And my essential question for Shana this morning is what stays the same regardless of the outcome? In other words, what stays the same regardless of whether Trump wins or Biden wins? So we're going to explore this question. What stays the same? What's not going to change?
It's such a great question, Chris, with so many possibilities for answers. I don't know. Do you want to jump in first? Because I know you've given this some thought.
I have given it some thought. I think one thing that is not changing is, and I'm going to phrase it this way, can we mend the truth space? So we, meaning the national community, the whole society of the United States, mend, meaning it's broken and needs to repair. And the truth space, what do I mean by this? I mean a common view of what is so and what is not so. And that needs mended because you can't talk to people who don't use words seriously or, yeah, I guess that's the way I want to say it. You can't talk to people who don't use words seriously. It's like being in Alice in Wonderland.
It is, and I know, I think it was the second George W. Bush election, people started to talk about how during elections we used to talk about sort of geography, right? You know, and what states people lived in. But now we had to start talking about state of mind, you know, because it is such a radical difference. When somebody can say something without proof, without evidence, and simply be believed because they're the person behind the curtain or what have you. So it will remain in need of being fixed for sure, regardless of who wins.
And we know, and we've covered this and lots of people talk about it, but the way that social media amplifies the,
I think the word you're looking for is BS. Yes. So the way that social media amplifies the BS is stunning.
Right. And you can then section yourself off and talk only to people who use words the same way that you do, but it's a subset of the whole.
Right. Right.
Then how do you break out of that to find a common language, which is my way of saying the common language is the way that we restore what truth is when we're able to talk to each other and work towards a common vision of what is so mm-hmm. in the world. That's mm-hmm. the definition of truth. Well, if you're not engaged in conversation with people who have a different perspective, then you can't get there. That yeah. might be far too rosy a picture of things.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's true. I think that part of the problem, Chris, and I just can't, this is the place where my own brain sort of warps out, is, you know, if something is right there in front of your face, I mean, you can actually see it, okay? So I'm looking at a red ball. And somebody's telling me, no, it's blue. You know, at what point do you just say, I cannot get on board with it. That is a blue ball because it is clearly a red ball.
That's a perfect example. That's really the level at which we are at. It's that basic. And my whole thing about social media being in its own little silos isn't quite right. You're that example is, I think, closer to the mark of where we are.
And that's a narrative that's being really spun hard from the top down. I mean, on both sides, you know, I think that what has so energized this election is fear. And each side has a healthy dose of it. The Trumpians are terrified that we're all socialists and we're going to rape, pillage, and plunder their communities as soon as Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are announced as the winners of the election. And the Biden-Harris team, I think, is, just petrified of the Trumpers because we see skinheads and Nazis support, you know, overt white supremacists supporting Donald Trump. That doesn't mean that all Trumpians are racists. I mean, are any more racist than we are, you know. More or less, right? So, you know, I think it does come down to the need to be in communication with one another because there's a part of me that just, you know, I was at the polls yesterday and I was doing neutral observation. It was pastors at the polls, clergy, observer, and talking to the Trump guys and, you know, they were like, yeah, well, you know, I mean, there is, you know, if these guys win and, you know, these riots are going to break out and, you know, all this violence. And I'm like, but, don't you guys hate us because we're those, you know, hybrid driving, tie-dye wearing, latte sipping, tree hugging? You hate us because we're all those things. And you're saying that, but you think we hybrid driving, latte sipping, tie-dye wearing, tree hugging folks now are suddenly going to like flip out, get violent, pick up arms and burn your cities and towns and take your women and children? Like, come on. There's no history to support that narrative. There is some history to support the narrative that the longer Donald Trump stays in office, the more empowered these right-wing groups are going to feel. But I think it's a mistake for the left to look past all the Trumpians who are just folk and not see them, because then we're giving power to the extreme right. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now.
Stay on that soapbox. Come on. My second observation with regards to my question, what stays the same regardless of whether Trump wins or Biden wins, is this. If we want to save the Republic, it will be a spiritual awakening, not a political revolution. That came to me this morning really strongly. It reaffirms, this is somewhat self-serving to say this, but to me it reaffirms what this show is, or what the idea that has this show is. I just deeply believe this, Shana, that the political situation does not have a political solution. It has a moral, spiritual piece to it that's more fundamental, more essential.
Well, the parents of this political problem are fear and anger.
And those are spiritual problems. That's well said. Beautiful. Yes.
So
fear and anger. And anger is often a defense against shame. And I feel like shame is And shame is also related to a sense of belonging. So who belongs and who doesn't, which is a huge question in our society. I'm not sure politics can solve that. I mean, I feel like, I mean, there are political things that can be done to address those things. I'm not saying politics is not important. It's just that it's so overemphasized, and we put too much, we want to make politics carry more water than it can carry in terms of healing the whole. So I think about, you know, in terms of a spiritual awakening in this country, it's so fascinating. It's so interesting to think about, because we have people on the left who don't want religion to have anything to do with public life. Right. So we have to fend off, I think, those people. And then we have to fend off people on the right who want to establish a religion, Christianity,
by attaching
to political power.
Their brand of Christianity.
Their brand, attaching to political power.
Yeah.
So I feel like what you and I are advocating and some other people are advocating is kind of a middle way.
Let me just finish this.
That the religious voice does have a place in the public square, in the secular public square, secular understood as neutral. And we have certain gifts to offer that kind of conversation from a spiritual perspective, not just Christian. I mean, that's the beauty, is that we need to invite all of the spiritual perspectives to be publicly spoken, because the riches are there to help people think about, what is the meaning of life? How are we to share our common life together? What are the aims and goals and purposes of a human existence? These are the questions that vex us.
Those are the questions that vex us, and those are the questions that, while faith has sought to answer, what happens, I think, is a lot of times when our faith goes into the public square, we've got to be able to free it from the vestiges of religious language. We've got to be able to take the concept. I mean, this is... Martin Luther King was brilliant at this. You know, he could take an absolutely faithful concept, push it through the United States Constitution, and it would come out as something that everybody understood and could get behind. And I, you know, when you were talking, I was thinking to myself, well, where am I seeing that faithful response being channeled out into the public square in a way that's so subtle people don't even realize that it's faithful? And I'm thinking about, you know, the organizations that, you know, Black Lives Matters and the Poor People's Campaign. And, you know, we're organizing for demonstrations right here in New Hampshire, and we're organizing for peaceful demonstrations. And, you know, it's a lot of that work, that teaching of nonviolence, teaching de-escalation, is coming through the American Friends Service Committee. You know, so that's like, you know, there's all these people who are now getting a crash course in how to see another's humanity even when they don't see yours. We would translate that into religious language. All human beings are created in the divine image, and therefore we have to keep speaking to the God within, you know, until the God within shows up. You know, just keep speaking past the asshole and keep speaking to the God within until the God within shows up. But, you know, that idea, while we've taken it out of religious language and we're putting it into the language of de-escalation and nonviolence training. So, again, I think you're right. And I think the challenge for a lot of us who are religious is to bring those concepts out in a way where they're unfettered from the religious language.
And that's crucial in a pluralistic society. And that's another piece of this that I find so fascinating. It's actually a religious duty for religious people to be able to transcend the religious language. Mm-hmm. It's a way to be, for example, welcoming the way that our religions ask us to be welcoming. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean watering down to the lowest common denominator. I mean, your example of seeing the humanity in the other, your example of Martin Luther King, these things are not watered down. This isn't religion light. It's deeply spiritual perspective that's then able to be translated, I use the word translation, into a pluralistic society.
Well, and I think particularly when that translation is action-based, when it's, you know, grounded in actual works that it really takes, you know, it takes hold in people. It gets their hearts, and it becomes then a spiritual practice, whether they know that they're engaged in a spiritual practice or not. I mean, you know, Jesus said, turn the other cheek. If our protesters on the left start screaming at people on the right, try to, you know, get them past that.
I thought another.
Oh, wait, I thought of one. Can I throw one in?
You
okay.
Go.
A thing that is not going to change regardless of who is elected is that our democracy will continue to need to be healed. Our democracy needs to be healed. Parker Palmer has a wonderful book, The Healing of Democracy. I recommend it to everyone. He talks about, you know, creating a body politic that is worthy of a human soul. Such a beautiful concept. But yeah, democracy is still going to need to be healed no matter who gets elected.
It's amazing that you said that because, of course, I was about to say something similar, although I wouldn't. See, here's where I part ways and go on to my own little island, which I'm trying to invite people to join me on. I wouldn't say it's democracy that needs to be healed because democracy, again, foregrounds the political category. So I would say it's the social body. And this might be...
It's a both and.
Well, it is, but...
Because...
But if you agree with me that the political is not going to be healed through political means, then we need to start with a public, non-political space.
Oh, yeah, I'm not recommending an order to any of this or suggesting an order, but I am saying that the democracy is in need of healing because that democracy does impact our lives every day, whether we like it or not. You know, the way laws work, the way institutions work, the extent to which white supremacy is woven throughout the fabric of, you know, all of our nation's institutions is stunning. You know, and this stuff impacts people's lives every day. The extent to which poverty is woven into the fabric of our community and the number of people that impacts and how it impacts them is unacceptable. So, you know, so there is, yes, I agree with you. We'll fix the democracy by getting a massive spiritual adjustment on, but the democracy still needs to be healed.
You in elucidating the different elements of how you understand the word democracy, broadened it and widened it out in a way that I resonate with. I had a narrower definition in my own mind about what democracy is. So our question today, our essential question today, what stays the same regardless of whether Trump wins or Biden wins? We've explored this question for the last 20 minutes. It's time for takeaways.
Chris, what's your takeaway?
If we want to save the Republic, it will be a spiritual awakening, not a political revolution. I said it earlier. I say it again. This election being so close, once again showing us really different perspectives on what America is and what it ought to be and how it should move forward. Very different views. I don't think those views can be reconciled politically. And so I'm looking for and hoping for a kind of changes of heart in the formation of citizens who can disagree without being disagreeable. And I don't think that's a political answer. I think that's just to take it out of theological language then, it's an attitude adjustment. It's a different way of thinking about the other, our fellow citizens. So if you want to take it out of the spiritual, you can call it just a moral awakening in terms of compassion, civility.
Civility is the word civility, to bring back civility. You know, my takeaway as we've been talking is I've just been thinking of how hard this is going to be. And I have to be honest with you, there's just a little piece of me that's wondering, can we do it? You know, I mean, it has been said that God left Israel to wander in the desert for 40 years because, you know, they were enslaved in Egypt, and had they been brought into the promised land, if you bring people who had been enslaved into a promised land. They would bring the enslaved mentality into the promised land with them. And, you know, that whole story is lifting up a role reversal, right? Where so we're going from humans are kind of disposable to be used by the upper classes and then disposed of to, no, human beings are created in the divine image, right? So there's, but you can't, I mean, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still, you know, it's still a pig. So I'm wrestling with that. I think there's a lot of hard work ahead of us. And regardless of who wins, it is not a time for people to, you know, crawl back into their holes. This is a time to awaken. It's a time, it's all hands on deck.
Thank you for casting the story that we are living in and through in this moment into the context of the larger story.
We're always leaving something, aren't we?
We are.
We're always in Exodus.
That is, that man, that's beautiful, because we have to tell ourselves a story about where we are, and that's a great one.
And it has a happy ending. So stay curious, people.
Go deep.
And shine light.
Our show today is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. Our show is also brought to you by Filmmakers Collaborative, our fiscal sponsor. You can go to our website, find us at whatingods.com. That's
WHATINGODS. Whatingods.com.
Great to see you, Shayna.
Good to see you as always, Chris.